Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Live from Joe's mom's basement, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. Hello, you poor saps. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and because of the emotional stress our lawyers tell us we've probably caused you while you went against your better judgment and listened to silly podcasts about money, we're pleased to inform you, insert your first name here, that you're eligible to file a claim for damages. All we'll need to process your request is for you to fill out sections A through E of this simple 87-page document. Don't forget also to include a recent physical and blood sample, and we'll have your big refund of $1.87 in a jiffy, or in 4 to 6 weeks, whichever takes longer. While you're filling out your paperwork, let's entertain you with an entire show about, wait for it, you're going to love it, life insurance. Help us welcome today's roundtable guests, including from the popular blog, Yes, I Am Cheap, Sandy Smith, and from Insurance Blog by Chris Huntley, and the icing on the cake from Get Rich Quickish, Ty Roberts. And because sections F through W might take you a little longer than you'd like, for no extra charge, we'll throw in a FreshBooks FinTech segment. On today's show, from financial planning tool Sum 180, CEO Carla Deering joins us. And here he is, the guy making life insurance discussions fun again, Joe Saul Sehy.
Hey, welcome to Friday, everybody. I am Joe Saul Sehy, Average Joe Money on Twitter, and what a fantastic weekend. Just found out that my daughter's going to be running in this weekend's track meet up at the University of Arkansas, and as a walk-on, she doesn't get to run very much. So what a great way for you to spend your Friday listening to us talk about life insurance. And then if your weekend's as good as mine, it's going to be a great weekend. Hey, the best way to kick off any podcast, though, is to talk about you heading to stackybenjamins.com/magnify money. Because when you go to Magnify Money, you know what you find out? You find out that shopping anonymously for financial products has never been more fun than when you head to Magnify Money. Here's the reason why. It's very easy. When you go there, what you're going to see is a list of things that you're looking for, like consolidation loans to pay down your debt, checking accounts, better savings accounts, whatever it is, they have it at Magnify Money. You click on exactly what you want, and bam, there's a list very easily organized from best to worst on fine print, what the terms are, how easy it is to sign up, and bam, there it is. StackyBenjamins.com/magnify money. Why just go into your bank and ask them, hey, what's the best stuff you've got, when you can shop all the banks and do it from your own home and also do it anonymously? StackyBenjamins.com/magnify money. And the best of the best over there is SoFi, wherever they compete, especially in the area of student loans. You'll find SoFi to be the most attractive option. StackyBenjamins.com/SOFI. Here's the deal with SoFi. They're the leader in marketplace lending. And what that means is that when you head to SoFi.com, you're going to find out very quickly that not only do they have very, very flexible terms and very easy to understand fine print, according to the people over at Magnify Money, they also are super easy to work with all around. In fact, it's funny. They are known as a new kind of finance company. And they largely, if you know anything about SoFi, you know the reason why they grew so quickly was basically because of people's frustration with traditional banking. Whether you're refinancing the student loans, looking at a mortgage, personal loans, parent plus refinancing, StackyBenjamins.com/SOFI. 225,000 people already work with them, and they've already funded $15 billion in loans to date. How about that? All right. We got a great show, fantastic roundtable. So let's just get into it, huh? All special contributors today. Let's rock. Let's walk across the basement here and fire up my dad's shortwave radio, see if we can get some of the greatest minds. Today, we're talking about insurance. And I'm so excited because we have insurance from three different points of view. Let's start off with the gentleman who's in the industry. We'll go to San Diego first, where I think Chris Huntley from Huntley Wealth and Insurance Services joins us. Chris, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Dude, hi, welcome, welcome to the party. How are you?
I'm awesome. Thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah. So you are a huge advocate of term insurance. You did a huge term insurance movement recently. Tell everybody about what you do.
Yeah, I own a life insurance agency here in San Diego, California. We are licensed in 50 states. So we really just focus on life insurance sales. And it wasn't a term insurance movement. It was actually a rebellion against whole life insurance.
That's right. That's a much better. I was trying to put the positive spin on it, Chris.
Yeah. It's the same thing, but I think rebellion just has a little more kick to it.
It really does. Makes people want to light torches and get on that train. But that ended up being a great thing, didn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I got a lot of press from that and helped me solidify my own viewpoints on it as well.
Yeah, fantastic. And let's move all the way across the country to the great city of New York, where a woman in human resources joins us back on the show after a long time away. Man, have we missed her from Yes, I Am Cheap. It's Sandy Smith.
I feel like I have that human resources stink just kind of following me around. So when you say HR, I've pictured myself as who's the kid in Charlie Brown, Linus or whatever, whomever.
I don't.
With the cloud of the HR stink around me. But it's good to be back.
I was just on a trip with somebody, Sandy, and he was the head of HR at a company. And I said, I think I might be one of the only people on earth who thinks your job is so flipping cool. So Sandy, every time I talk about HR, I think what you do is amazing. It's really cool.
So there's two of us. Yes.
That's right. I found all of us. So you have been.
So you're the one.
That's right. You have been busy lately, though. Tell everybody, though, about Yes, I Am Cheap and what you're doing.
Yes, I Am Cheap is dedicated to helping people get out of debt, typically by helping them start a side hustle. That's my other thing. Even though I'd love for you to work for me at a regular job, I also don't want you to work for me at a regular job only because I just might fire you. So, yeah, that's what I do at Yes, I Am Cheap.
Yeah, and she definitely means that she would fire you. You're not kidding there, are you?
You're fired.
Nice.
I did the Donald Trump hand. Yeah,
we miss that. We don't get that when you're on the shortwave.
Yeah, but there was a good hand. It was a good snake, like, you're fired.
Like backhand cut, yeah. Well, Sandy, we're so happy to have you back. Couldn't be more excited. The show's missed you. But a guy that we're happy to also introduce to the show, let's go to a gentleman who isn't in the insurance industry. He's not in HR, but he has a family, which means he's very interested in this topic of insurance. From the Get Rich Quickish blog, it's Ty Roberts. Welcome to the party, man.
Thanks, Joe. I don't get invited to a lot of parties, so I'm very happy to be here.
Yeah, and just the type of party you want to be invited to is an insurance party.
And an HR woman that wants to fire me, exactly.
That's right. It's like a party made in hell, right? So tell everybody about Get Rich Quickish.
Yeah, so I'm a married father of four. We live on a single income in the Seattle area. After a late start to the financial independence game, we're doing our best to get rich quickish and retire early. We blog all about that, and I'm a Gen Xer, so time really isn't on my side like it used to be, but it's not too late either, so we're on a mission to get rich quickish.
Well, from one Gen Xer to another, I feel your pain. How old are the kids?
They range from 16 to 6.
Oh my goodness, so you're all over the map.
Yeah, we're teaching one to drive and one to ride a bike. So
that is crazy. I'll stay out of your neighborhood either way. Right.
Nice.
Well, guys, let's get started with this because we've got three fantastic articles to talk about. We're going to start off with this one from U.S. News and World Report written by Jeff Williams. Three ill-advised reasons not to buy life insurance. And Chris, let's start with you because you're in the business and you probably hear people talk about reasons why they're not going to buy life insurance all the time. How do these three compare to the ones that you usually hear about?
Yeah, they're pretty similar. So a couple of the excuses that Jeff Williams gives is, you know, hey, I've got plenty of assets. So if I check out early, my family can fall back on those. Now, that was one of them. Another one was, I'm healthy, so it'd just be a waste of money. And then the other one is just putting it off. I'll get it. That's obviously the most common, is putting it off, or I want to look at some other quotes.
Isn't that true, though, that I kind of thought that number two and number three, I'll get it later, I realize it's important, and I'm healthy, are kind of two sides of the same coin, because we think, you know, if I'm healthy, I'll just buy it later when I'm not so healthy.
Yeah, definitely. I think the first excuse that he was countering about, if I check out early, I have plenty of assets. Now, that one, I sort of agree with that line of thinking. You know, I feel like if someone has $1 million of assets in the bank, and if some of it's liquid, that maybe you don't need something to, maybe your family doesn't need the life insurance to fall back on and they're somewhat self-insured, you know, but the one with I'm healthy, I just think that's lame. I mean, you could get hit by a truck tomorrow and, you know, you've got maybe 10, 20, 30 years of income earning potential that's down the drain. It could be just a financial disaster for your family. So I don't agree with the I'm healthy statement.
Yeah. When you're teaching this to people at work, Sandy, or when you talk to people that work where you work, do you find that people have these three or do they have different excuses that you hear all the time?
Well, I'm lucky because a lot of our people are pretty young. The average age is in the 30s at my office because I'm in fintech. So, you know, they're all developers and programmers and they're barely come out of their cubicles, right? So they're all thinking, I'm too young. I really don't need this, you know, yet. Yeah. But here I sit and I've had to process one employee death every year for the last 4 years. The last one I processed was literally 3 weeks ago. So they only kind of realize that they might need life insurance when another employee dies. But the most often thing that I hear is, oh, I'm too young. I really don't need it right now. Right. Well,
but like Chris has said, if they don't have assets yet, do they need it? I mean, do they need it to cover debt?
Well, here's my thinking around that was somewhat similar when I was about their age. You know, not that I'm that far off from 30, but when I was in my early 20s, I was thinking, hey, if I die now, who cares? Because I've got a ton of student loans. I've got a bunch of credit cards from all the pizza from college, you know. I'm not married. I don't own a home. I don't have any kids. If I drop dead tomorrow, who's going to pay my student loans? Nobody co-signed for it for me, right? I'm good to go there. Nobody co-signed on my credit cards. They don't have to pay a daggone thing. They just have to worry about my funeral. And I've got enough money in my 401k and I'm good to go. That was my thought process through my 20s. But as I got later into my 20s, I started thinking, well, what if I get married? And what if I want to buy a house? And what if I want to do those things? It's so much cheaper for me to buy the life insurance now, something, right, than doing it 10 years later. And so that's where I kind of started to evolve in that it was just so much cheaper to get it in my late 20s versus in my 30s. I just got it early just in case. And now here I am, I'm married, still no kids. I've got a fur baby, but now I've got, you know, a house and other assets that I need to protect. So I'm happy that I got it when I got it versus continuing that line of thinking. But it's definitely something that I fight in my office with a pretty young staff.
Ty, I'm going to be leaning on you a lot more in article number two, but right now I want to go back to Chris because the stuff that Sandy's talking about, this idea of insurability, right? We're more insurable when we're younger. We can make sure that before we have things come up, you know, maybe medical problems come up, that we can get the insurance. Is that as important factor as Sandy's making it? Or do you see people, maybe a lot of insurance people overplay that?
You know, I think it's a small risk for people in their 20s that they're going to develop a health condition that so 10, 15 years down the line, if they get married and have dependents, that they're not going to be able to afford coverage. However, it does happen sometimes. That being said, I don't sell a lot of policies to single people with no dependents. It's very hard for someone to make that investment when they don't see the immediate need. But yeah, you know, what Sandy said is it's true that it's cheaper when you're earlier, not just because life insurance is cheaper, you know, as you're younger, but also because 10 years from now, who knows what health condition that you'll have. You know, when I was 27, I got my first policy and I was shocked that I had really high cholesterol. I had no idea. And I actually got penalized and I didn't get the best rate. And here I was, you know, 6'1", 170. I've always been in great shape. I thought I was a shoo-in to get the best rate and I didn't.
When you were talking earlier also about assets, right? About the fact that they have enough assets so they don't need insurance. What about liquidity? Like what if a lot of those assets are wrapped up in rental houses, let's say, that they can't sell right away? Is that a factor where they should have some money, maybe in insurance that's more liquid?
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, you don't want to put your family in a situation where they've got to sell an asset in a distressed sale, right? Whether it's real estate or a business. So, I think it's all about having liquid assets on hand.
Sandy, back to you for just a second. You talk about processing people's deaths, and I just can't imagine that. When you're talking to family members, do you have any stories of times when they probably should have been better covered than they were?
Absolutely. And the one that sticks out in my mind was about 2 years ago. And this was just kind of like the luck of the draw. This gentleman was in his 40s, early 40s, had started with a company, I kid you not, 4 weeks before, dropped out of a heart attack.
Holy cow.
And he had just slid into the our employer plan, where he was covered just based on the fact that we offer 3 times your annual salary as a benefit in life insurance that you don't have to pay for. So when his spouse called, they had nothing liquid, really. It was his paycheck that was coming and this life insurance that I was processing for them. He had nothing else. And if I recall, he had 16-year-old twins. Had he not been on the company's life insurance policy, the only cash that she would have had was his paycheck, his final paycheck. And that would have been it.
Holy cow.
Yeah, that one sticks out really, really, you know, big in my mind, because they had a house. And so you're thinking, oh, I've got this asset, right? But that asset is tied to a huge debt as well. She was a stay-at-home mom. They had kids and they just didn't have the money. She would not have had the money to pay for a funeral. So even if you have assets, you have to think about liquidity. How quickly can your family get their hands on this money to bury you even? And I've had to walk people through this process a number of times because of liquidity issues. And it kind of makes you as the HR person a little bit fearful, because you see these things that occur. So I know that people in HR, people, especially people who work with benefits, tend to be some of the most insured people who I know, because they just see all these horror stories and they end up just overbuying. And I'm probably guilty of the same thing myself, just having dealt with some of these very same issues. And the ages ranged. I've had to process a death for a 22-year-old. And then the oldest was the gentleman the other day who was 54. Still not that old, right?
Right.
But a whole age range, and their families all needed the money right away just to bury them.
Well, I want to move on to our next article, but before we do that, well, one question I don't know the answer to, Chris, that you do better than anybody here. How long does it take somebody to actually, a family, to get the money after someone dies from a life insurance policy?
The quick answer is typically once you file the claim, you're going to get the money within 30 days. The companies have to pay interest after that. However, if the death occurs within the first 2 years after the policy was issued, then there's typically a contestability period where they're going to look into it, sort of like in the movies, where they might have an insurance adjuster check into things, make sure that everything was on the up and up, all the questions were answered, you know, correctly on the application, that there were no misrepresentations, you know, lies about their any drug use, smoking use, things like that. In that case, it can take several months, but typically 30 days or less.
Okay. I love when you talk about the movies, because I was just listening to they have old time radio on XM. I was on a road trip last week and they had that where they thought that the guy had bought life insurance and committed suicide. So it was this huge, like even from the 1940s, they're talking about the same stuff, which I thought was pretty awesome. Let's move on, guys, to this article from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. 4 steps to take before you buy life insurance. This written by a guy that all three of us know a little bit because we're in the financial blogging community. Jeff Rose wrote this. Jeff writes that Americans treat life insurance the same way they treat retirement. The vast majority know they're not adequately prepared, yet they don't always take steps to change. So Ty, believe it or not, we're actually going to bring you into this discussion. Jeff's first point on here is to assess your risk and be specific. At what point was it on baby number one, or when you started your job? When did you decide, you know what, it's time for me to get some life insurance?
You know, I always knew that I should get the insurance. There were a lot of reasons I didn't. They were all pretty pathetic excuses. You know, no time, no money, indifference, whatever it might be. Maybe I felt like time was on my side, but there was never a light switch that went off for me that said, okay, now's the time, I've got to do it.
So it was some of the excuses we just read about in the last article.
Absolutely. But mainly, I didn't want my replacement to be living the good life because I checked out early.
Right. I'm with you, bro.
Oh, so you're telling your spouse, you're like, I'm not buying life insurance because I don't want him to get the benefit?
Absolutely.
Right. So how many children did you have before you decided to buy life insurance, let's say, outside of work?
It's kind of terrible to say, but I had all 4. I'm a recent purchaser. of life insurance outside of work just a few months ago is when I took the plunge.
Wow. So your oldest might have been what, 15 then?
Absolutely. It was 15. So yeah, I dodged a bullet there for sure.
Wow. Because I was going to ask you, and actually let's turn back to Chris. We're going to lead on you. If Ty had bought insurance with baby number one, and then he goes and he has baby number two, then baby number three, baby number four, is it better for him at baby number one? We talked about future insurability earlier, to buy enough to project, okay, I'll probably have kids in the future, or does he add on more later as he goes?
Well, for me, it's not so much about the dependence as it is the replacement of income. So we typically will, just like what Jeff recommended, you know, 7 to 10 times your income. And yeah, I think you can just add on later. If you look at things, you're like, wow, maybe 7 to 10 times my income's not going to cut it anymore now that we've got 4 children. Yeah. I know I've added on 2 separate times personally.
Okay. Do you have children then?
Yeah, we've got 3 children.
Okay. Because I know that it's income, but isn't it also really expenses, replacement of, you know, when we look at capital needs of a family, the needs go up as you have more mouths to feed.
Yeah, definitely. I just don't like to overcomplicate the needs analysis. I will typically recommend a multiple of income rather than, you know, I think a lot of people like to overanalyze it and they look at, okay, I've got this mortgage, I want these student loans paid off, this credit debt. And then we're going to add in X percentage of my income replacement for this many years, factoring in inflation and rate of return I'm going to get on the invest. I mean, it's a lot to look at when I really think, well, look, you're already paying your mortgage. You're already paying your student loans. You're already paying your credit card bill. So if you just have your income replaced, you'll still be able to pay those things. You don't necessarily have to pay all that off and factor all that into the equation. So it depends on who I'm talking to. If I'm talking to someone who's not real sophisticated about it, I'll typically just recommend to them a multiple of income. If they're more sophisticated and, you know, you get the green personality, you know, architect or not architect, but engineer type,
right? Right.
You know, and we'll just talk all day about it and we'll have a blast.
Well, because it's a couple of insurance nerds in a room together, right? Ty, so what did you do? Did you do a factor of your income? Did you use one of the online calculators? How did you figure out how much was enough for the family?
So I got my insurance through your show sponsor. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that, but I just did.
No, that's through Haven Life then.
I got it through Haven Life. The policy's, you know, backed by Mass Mutual. I had a lot of confidence in them. But what made me pull the trigger on it, Joe, was how easy it was. I love this article, but I think going through this analysis stage, you can somewhat be paralyzed when you're looking at, you know, the different types of insurance that are available. You know, how much do you need? How long do you need it for? So when you're analyzing that, it's easy to get paralyzed and look and say, what do I need? Whole, term, life, universal, variable. Do I consider disability or supplemental? How much coverage is enough? I don't know. It made it easy for me to go online and do it. I don't like the rules of thumb or the multipliers of income personally. I think those are a great starting off point. For me, what we did was figured out what our financial independence number was. And that's what we went for.
Did you use, now Haven Life, and they're not the only ones that have this, they have a calculator, right, where you can figure it out using the calculator. Did you play around with that?
I sort of went in knowing what I wanted. Again, we went in to hit our magic number, that number that's okay, going to make us financially independent. But they did have a questionnaire that asked, you know, your age, your kids, your income, you know, one source of income or multiple. And based on that, they come back and they give you a range and they say, you know, you could be here or you could be here. So it was very helpful in making the choice, but I went in knowing what I wanted.
Right. So to Chris's point, are you an engineer?
I am in marketing. <All right. laughs> I'm the opposite of an engineer.
Like, yeah, we'll just wing it. As long as the graphic looks good, we're good to go. Is that what you guys do in marketing?
If it looks pretty, then let's run with it.
There it is. Well, Sandy.
I think the point I was trying to make is to simplify it as much as you need. I mean, you don't want to prevent anyone from making this important purchase.
Right.
That's the point I was making.
No, because that is the important thing, Chris. I'm sure in your profession, you see too many people get paralyzed around having the perfect number.
Right. It's like you're a parent, right? And your child asks you about, you know, how are babies made? It's like, well, you could talk to them all day and give them a real answer, but you're going to protect them and you're going to just give them a little bit of information that that's all they need. And that's kind of how I typically sell.
That's not how I explained it to my kids. I jumped in the deep end, Chris.
Sandy, let's get you back in on this conversation, because I'm wondering, when you've got a group of people at work and you're trying to tell them how much insurance they should buy in your plan at work, what do you tell them?
So So keeping in mind that most of our folks tend to be pretty young.
Right.
I go with the very simple multiplier, or either that or covering their debt and what they think their family might need afterwards. As our employees get a little bit older and they're more sophisticated, then I kind of walk through, well, what are your assets? What's liquid? How much income do you make? How much longer? Kind of like what we discussed earlier, how much time do you think you need to cover? Do you have kids? Do you plan on covering their college? So the gentleman who passed away the other day, for example, I said that the day that he passed away, his wife was an instant millionaire because he had gone through and done this assessment between what he had in his 401k. He had over $500,000 in his 401k, plus the company sponsored life insurance, plus additional life insurance that he bought at work, plus life insurance he had outside of work. She, you know, walked away with multiples of millions of dollars. And he was a little bit better than others because he had a health condition and he knew that it could shorten his lifespan. So he actually was very, very, very well prepared, but he was, again, in his 50s. What do I say to our guys in their 20s? It's a little bit harder because these people are still paying for their student loans. They might be thinking about getting married. They might not. And so, again, I'm still fighting with that. What do you think you need? But then I'm also fighting with the Superman syndrome in that you're going to live forever.
Right.
So I at least like to get them something, right? And until they understand the importance of life insurance, then we can go with their needs. But at least something for now. And something usually is what's going to cover your student loans and your debt and stuff. If nobody else is co-signed for it, then we don't worry about that. But if somebody else is co-signed and your mom's going to have to pay it when you die, what's left when you die that somebody else has to pay for? And then would you like to leave them a little something extra and something to bury you? And that's where I start off at. Just very simple so that they're not scared of it.
Yeah.
Because again, we're talking about their mortality and nobody wants to think they're going to die. Nobody does.
Sandy, quick question. With the, I'm not real familiar with group plans, but most of the ones that I see, people say that they've got a multiple of income, one, yep, two, 3 years. Do they have the ability typically to go beyond 3 years of income replacement?
Oh, yeah. So, for example, there's the group term insurance where we set the number, which is three times your salary, up to a maximum of $500,000. That's company provided off the bat. You don't pay a penny for it. And then you have the ability to purchase supplemental life insurance. And that actually goes on a dollar value. And there's a guarantee issue. So for those of you guys listening who don't know what that is, that's the amount that you can get in life insurance where we're not going to question you. You don't have to go for it. Any kind of health exam or anything, as long as you sign up for it and you pay for it, it's yours. Anything above the guarantee issue, then you've got to go through an evidence of insurability. So you've got to go for the health exams, all that other stuff, up to a cap. And it depends on whatever it is that your company has signed up for. In our case, I think our cap is up to an additional $500,000 or $750,000, I think it is this year. So you have the potential as an employee to have $1.25 million in life insurance just from the company alone.
Ty, do you also have insurance through work?
I do. We're covered in multiple places. We've got our personal insurance. We have the voluntary plan through my employer. And then I also have a policy where I'm paying through work. Okay. It's not a great policy and I'll probably need to dump it soon, but we do.
Why do you need to dump the one through work? The Haven one is less expensive?
That's exactly. I get more with Haven Life for about half the cost. And so the plan that we've got is to dump the one where I'm paying at work. That's for four times my salary. So we'll save that money that's coming out of my paycheck. And we're going to use that to get insurance on my wife.
Do you find that's often the case, Chris, is that people can find insurance outside their work, you know, beyond the free stuff that Sandy talked about, less expensive on their own than they can through work?
It depends on their health. I mean, if they're unhealthy, it's awesome to be in a group plan because typically there's only a couple questions, I believe. Sandy, correct me if I'm wrong, but typically it'll just ask you know if you smoke or not, your age, or just a couple questions, and they don't get too much into your health.
We don't even ask that initially for the guarantee issue, but above that, yeah, they're the very simplest questions. You know, have you had cancer? Do you smoke? Do you have diabetes? I think is one of them. Like three or four simple questions.
Heck, I'd start to smoke.
Yeah, it's really easy to get through those questions for people that do have some sort of health history. But for people who are really healthy, they're getting lumped in with all those people who are squeaking through with health issues. And so if you're healthy, you don't want to be in that pool. You want to be in the pool with all the Olympic athlete, you know, right? With all the Michael Phelpses, so that you can pay what you deserve to pay, you know, a lower premium. Awesome. And you can get that on your own, typically much cheaper than in a group plan.
Well, there's something else too. And Sandy, if somebody stops working for the company that you work for, as an example, what happens to that supplemental insurance that they bought on their own?
That's a great question. And I'm cackling because people are always shocked when they leave the company about what happens to their insurance. So you lose the group rate. That's the first thing.
Yeah.
So if you're paying a cheaper insurance, you're paying cheaper, you now go into the marketplace. And sometimes it's a lot more expensive with these companies than if you went out someplace else and bought it yourself. That's when it's allowed to be converted. Not every company allows you to take your policy with you, right? Some do, some don't. The current company that I'm with allows you to. I've been at companies before that did not allow you to convert your policy, which means the minute you no longer work for the company, you no longer have insurance, which most people are very shocked about. Like, what do you mean I can't take the insurance with me? No, you can't take it with you. So I always encourage people as well to don't just have the company's insurance is great. That's wonderful. But again, you never know when I'm going to tap you on the shoulder and fire you. So you should always have your own life insurance. And I take my own advice. So I've got my own policy, you know, outside of work that I've got my own life insurance for, because I never know when I'm going to tap myself on the shoulder and say, you no longer work here either.
Yeah, it could be any day. Knowing you how I know
any
you.
Any day now.
Could be any minute. Yeah.
I'm kind of mean and evil.
Right. Even to yourself, right? Hey, everybody. I got to take a quick break from this awesome discussion. Isn't it awesome talking about life insurance? And I love the fact that our contributors come from three totally different points of view. And largely, they're all kind of agreeing, which doesn't really surprise me when you get smart people together talking very objectively about insurance. But we take a break at this time of day for our FreshBook FinTech segment, where we introduce you to some cool new technology. And cool and new are two things that entrepreneurs need, because while you're racing around the clock to wrap up, you know, the next three projects, prep for a meeting later in the afternoon, and tackle that mountain of paperwork, guess what? You are a freelancer. Is it challenging? Yes, it is. But our friends at FreshBooks believe the rewards are so worth it. And I know that you do too. As you know, the working world has changed very quickly. And with everything happening on the internet, there's never been more opportunities for you if you're self-employed. And FreshBooks is there to meet that need by announcing the launch of the all-new version of their cloud accounting software. Redesigned from the ground up, custom built exactly for the way you work, get ready for the simplest way to be more productive, better organized, and more importantly, to get paid quickly. You gotta move quickly, and FreshBooks helps you get there. Here's the deal. You can create and send professional looking invoices in less than 30 seconds. You can set up online payments with just a couple clicks and get paid up to 4 days faster, and see when your client has seen your invoice and put an end to the guessing games. Here's the deal. You get a 30-day unrestricted free trial just because you're a Stacking Benjamins listener. And to claim it, here's what you do. Head to stackingbenjamins.com/FreshBooks. That's stackingbenjamins.com/FreshBooks and enter Stacking Benjamins in the How Did You Hear About Us section. And guess what happens then? Tell them we sent you and they give you 30 days free. We actually used that 30 days and it was amazing. And we are now happily on FreshBooks. You know what I like? I pull up FreshBooks and I have my dashboard of what's going on in the company at a snapshot. So I don't have a lot of time to spend on stuff that isn't related exactly to making the podcast and making our website work. I want to spend all my time there, and FreshBooks makes it so I can. My favorite type of cloud accounting software is software that makes it so that I can pay attention to other stuff and not on that. So stackingbenjamins.com/FreshBooks, enter Stacking Benjamins in the How Did You Hear About Us section. All right, today up, I am so excited. Carla Deering is the CEO of this company that I learned about a few weeks ago called Sum 180. And you know what? We're just going to have Carla tell you about it, because this is the way the world's headed when it comes to financial planning. And we're so happy that we get to be, hopefully, one of the first people to tell you about it. Carla Deering, coming down to the basement.
Hey,
And from Sum 180, Carla Deering joins me in the basement. Have a seat, Carla. How are you doing?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
I'm fantastic now that you're here, because you guys help people a lot now with their financial planning. And I want to know, because it's so different than the way a lot of people do financial planning, what was the key for you guys starting Sum 180? Was it your own frustration, or did you see a gap in the market? What happened?
A couple different things. First of all, when I started my career, I started out at Morgan Stanley, and I got a chance to get a broad look at the financial planning and advisor marketplace. And I really liked planners. I thought they were fantastic, and I thought it was very unfortunate that they could only serve people one at a time if you're lucky enough to find them and if you're lucky enough to afford them. Fast forward a couple decades later, I was working on a product called Vibrant Nation, which is the largest online network of women 35 to 65. And it was kind of a marketing type activity, but I was noticing women were online talking about lipstick and divorce and a million other topics and complete radio silence on money. Anytime money was talked about or any kinds of prompts to try to get the conversation going, it was complete radio silence and just, you know, crickets. So the question was, why is that? And we started to really dig in and do some research and got a number of insights as to why women were completely opting out of the financial industry. Just to give you a quick sense of that, I think the best example is that women's main concern, and this is data that's available, women's main concern is financial security. And so that's having enough now, having enough later, not be a burden to their children, et cetera. So if you put that on the one hand, and on the other hand, you think about the language and the actions of the financial services industry, you've got wealth management and win the investment game. And,
right.
You know, it just could not be a bigger disconnect, frankly. And I could go on and on, but essentially, people are really, really emotional about their money. They are fearful that they're not doing well, and they sure as heck don't want to sit in front of somebody whom we would know as an advisor and either get scolded a bit for what they believe is not a great situation or talked down to in any way. I mean, and there is research on this, but it's kind of gotten to crisis proportions, as you probably know, with half the country not having $400 for an emergency. It's gotten very, very serious. Long story short, it was like people need planners, but they're expensive and inaccessible. Couldn't we put the knowledge of planners into a system and make it accessible and affordable for everyone? And so that was the inspiration. And, you know, the marketplace talks all the time now about robo-advisors, which is, you know, having a machine manage your money. But this is a robo-planner.
Right.
So it's really one of a kind in the sense of being a totally comprehensive financial plan, but being 100% digital. And then just real quick, advisors are amazing. Planners are amazing. People are just afraid of them. So what we do is after you get your plan, then you can choose to access an advisor for those extra questions that you have or for further elaboration or to explore your concerns. And so it's really a hybrid model where you've got the best of both.
Is the main question that the Sum 180 plan answers then different than all this, you know, gobbledygook that you were talking about before about, you know, getting all this other stuff mixed up in it? Does it just answer the basic plan? Am I going to be okay?
No, it tells me what to do with my money.
Okay.
What are my three next steps with my money? Right. So what you think your three next steps are may not be the case. I'll give you an example. When I first put my information in the system, it spit out to me that I hadn't maximized my 401k. I'm in the industry. I should have done that. But you know what? It was right. When I set it up, I didn't fully maximize it. And so simple step to take, you know, in my case, being fortunate enough to be able to do that, a lot of people can't, but just cranking up that 401k contribution. So another person might be, hey, it's time to deal with those nagging credit cards. Another person might be, congratulations on your brand new baby, but now's the time to put in some term life insurance for the following amount, because if anything happens to you or your partner, you know, this will cover the baby's college education. Baby steps, next steps that are very doable that have to do with your overall money picture. For some people, it will be about their investments, but this is fundamentally going to deal with every aspect of your money.
I like the fact that it takes it in baby steps too, Carla, because, you know, people's ability, and you've seen the statistics on this, ability to handle more than three things at one time on their plate is very small. So I really like that. How's the nuts and bolts of how it works? Do I go in and open up a Sum 180 account and then I just start? Is it a question and answer? What happens?
Yeah. So you go into the system and the first thing it will tell you to do is prepare to gather your information. It's going to tell you exactly what to gather. So last year's W-2, last year's tax form, et cetera. And we make that as simple as we possibly can, but you do have to tell us about your financial picture. And then you sit down and enter that information into a kind of a chatty interview style. What makes it work well is we've asked you what you have. And so when you get to filling out your profile, it's just talking about the things you have, right? It's not this like overwhelming review of the entire financial market, right? That you have to find your information. Typically, it will run the results by an advisor, unless it's pretty straightforward. If it's very straightforward, you will get your next steps right on the screen. You will also get an income statement and a balance sheet, because as you know, those are really powerful documents. But in your report, you're only going to get those three next steps, not that 68-page plan that planner can't resist giving you. The first few pages of your plan, though, are your accomplishments, right? What have you done well? And suddenly you're looking at real data and you're saying, you know what? I'm not as bad off as I thought I was. And that is part of the formula along with the next steps, right? Is to say, hey, you know what? This is okay. Not only is it not as bad as you thought, but here are some really doable next steps that are personalized for you. They're not overwhelming. We're not going to tell you to save $40,000. If that's out of reach, we're going to tell you to save $473, you know, and it's those little steps that make it feel like, gosh, this is not as bad as I thought. It's going to be okay. I'm going to start now.
That's really cool. I like the fact that it tells me what I do right, because as you mentioned, so often we have no idea. We don't get to look at, as you know, as somebody who's worked in financial planning for a while, Carla, people don't usually get to see what they're doing well. They just have this overwhelming feeling that I'm not doing anything well.
Yeah, they really do. I mean, a very high percentage of people are extremely nervous when they're starting out this process. Actually, most of them are going to completely avoid this process at all costs, right? Because they really, it's so emotional and so concerning that they're actually ignoring it. So this is a big problem nationwide.
I have three questions left for you. And the first one is one that everybody wonders when they give a company like yours all of their financial information. What type of security do you guys use on the site? Who can see the stuff that I put in there? We've seen lots of privacy, you know, hacks. Like, what do you do to protect my information once I give it to Sum 180?
Yep. Like the other fintech companies, we have what we call bank level security. Well, not what we call bank level security. What is bank level security? So it's got the same requirements that anyone like Mint.com or anybody else that's taking money online has.
The other question everybody else wants to know, of course, is what does it cost and how do you guys make money?
Sure. Thanks. On a retail basis, if you find us online, it's $129 for a 1-year subscription. So that's in comparison to a financial planner that might be $3,000 to $5,000 for a year. So it's a really good deal and makes it accessible to everyone. The other way that the business works, you'll appreciate this. We found our pivot as a startup earlier this year, in realizing that this system is actually also delivers financial wellness that employers can make accessible to their employees. So the other way you would get this is if your company gave it to you as a benefit, and then you would obviously click through to a link and confirm that you're an employee and go from there. So the financial wellness marketplace is on fire. And it's really, really important. And digital allows it to really happen at scale. So I could go on and on about that, but maybe that's another day.
Yeah, I think that is the next time that you're on, Carla. But I do have a question, because, you know, some people listening own businesses. So if I have a business, I believe strongly that there's a bajillion reasons for people to have financial wellness for their employees. How do they, is there a different portal that they use than the average person uses if they want to try to sign up their business? How does that work?
Yes, they would just come directly to us from the website. There's a section for employers, and there's plenty of information on there that kind of explains the product, and come through to us, and it'll be more like a professional service contract.
Gotcha.
Which would have a startup fee, and then a per employee cost, which is around $40 for up to 150 employees, and $64 per employee for over 150 employees.
Got it. I see this right at the top of the screen. Very easy. And so it's some180.com. And you have to have already in the short life of some180, Carla, heard some great success stories. Are there any success stories that you can share of somebody using the software where it really changed their life?
Yeah, there was a great conversation with a woman who unfortunately had lost her husband unexpectedly a year before. She was only 31 years old, and she had two kids. And she said, you know, my idea of financial planning is Saturday morning having enough for the groceries. And I was so afraid of what you were going to tell me. But you showed me that even at my level, I can start saving. And you showed me what I needed to do to think ahead for college for my kids, which is something that I really want for them. And so you gave me the plan and the sort of the way that I can move forward in small steps. Really exciting.
I was going to say, how great does that make you feel when you hear that?
It is wonderful. People, this is not rocket science. People, you know, once they can really tackle it, they can move forward.
The website, again, is some180.com, and I'll have a link in the show notes at stackybenjamins.com. If you're walking the dog or you're driving to work, we'll have it for you there. Thanks for hanging out, Carla.
Thank you very much.
Big thanks again to Carla for coming down to the basement. Isn't that cool? You know, so many of us are afraid of meeting with financial planners, but we know we probably need one. So we get to start electronically first and kind of dip our foot in the water, see what it's all about and go, oh, okay. Decide what level of help you need. And I think that's probably, you know, that's the way that I think a lot of people are headed. I think Carla, as you heard, I think she's got her finger definitely on the pulse of where this ball's headed. All right, speaking of where the ball's headed, this podcast is headed back into the warm water of insurance planning. Let's talk again to Sandy Smith from Yes, I Am Cheap, Chris Huntley from Insurance Blog by Chris, and from Get Rich Quickish, Ty Roberts. Let's move on to our final piece, which comes to us from Market Watch. This is Five Types of Insurance You Probably Don't Need by Daniel Goldstein. You know, a lot of people think, Ty, about these types of insurance, you know, like life insurance, that I really need those. But then you've got like all these other crazy insurances. Have you ever found yourself on the receiving end of a type of insurance that maybe you probably shouldn't have had?
Well, I've been on the selling end of those.
Oh, have you? Okay.
Early on, you know, I'd sell cars and would sell extended warranties. I sold high-end fitness equipment and sold protection plans. Because of that experience, I learned to really dislike those. So I'm not a big fan of these extra insurances. You know, they're a profit center for these companies for a reason.
Yeah. You see, Chris, people with all kinds of different insurances. What's the craziest insurance you've seen someone have?
Crazy. I can't say crazy. A lot of people have mortgage insurance that it only pays off the balance of your mortgage if you die.
Right.
And it decreases as you pay down your mortgage. And, you know, we can typically handily beat that with just a level death benefit policy.
I know. Isn't that crazy? Why wouldn't somebody just go buy a life insurance policy instead of those? Because when I was a financial planner, I'd see these, not often, but like you, I'd see them from time to time. And the cost per thousand was through the roof.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think it's the convenience, because people will receive, after they purchase a home, they'll receive all the mailers, and it's quick and easy. They're almost, they make them quick and easy, like almost like if you worked for Sandy, right? Where it's very few questions and you can get covered. Well, the problem is with very few questions, there's a lot of risk for the insurance company. So
sure is.
It's going to charge you more.
You know, I will say, when I was getting my own policy, again, as somebody in their 20s getting a policy, and I I specifically overbought. And I know that I was overbuying at the time based on my income and assets, et cetera, but I was thinking about the future. I remember the broker called me back and they were like, the underwriter needs to know, how come you need this extra little bit of money? And I was like, well, I own property with my brother. So in case I drop dead, I want to make sure he's getting this money if I die. And I was like, oh, okay. So you don't have mortgage insurance. I'm like, this is what life insurance is for, buddy. Why am I going to pay for that when I can pay for this? Right. And it's much cheaper and it's all rolled into one. It's like, okay. So I remember you saying that. I just remember that story.
Oh, that's crazy. Have any of you ever thought about having pet insurance? Because that's the one that...
I have pet insurance.
I'm going to confess. You do have.
Shut up.
Why? Why do you have it? Tell me.
Okay. Here's the thing, though. I'm going to say this. I'm notoriously cheap. Yes, my side is yes, I am cheap. However, I resisted pet insurance for the first 6 years of my dog's life. And I think it was actually a very, very, very smart decision on my part not to have it when she was a puppy, because they either make it out of puppyhood and you're alive or you don't, right? So she made it out of puppyhood, so I'm good. Now she's like 7 and now, you know, issues start to crop up or so. So I kind of hedge my bets. So now I've got pet insurance, and I will say that this pet insurance has actually paid for itself, but I did it on purpose because I knew that I wanted to get the dog's teeth cleaned within 6 months or so. And the cost of the teeth cleaning was more than the cost of the insurance premiums for a year. So I was like, listen,
wow,
I can do the math, right? And in between, I get to take the dog for a couple of checkups. Now, if I cancel this insurance in the next couple of months because I just had her teeth cleaned, then I'm still coming out on top. But yeah, I have pet insurance. Don't tell anybody.
But you did the math ahead of time.
I did the math ahead of time. Exactly. That's the only way that I would have paid for it. Only way.
Ty, I'm fairly certain that over the years, people have approached you about having insurance on your kids, which is one of the things in this article that Daniel Goldstein says you shouldn't have. Have you ever considered insurance on your kids?
We have been approached on it multiple times. I do have insurance on my kids through my employer. It's provided. I'm not paying anything extra for it. I believe it would only cover the cost of a burial or a funeral. I think there's some type of a law that says you can't go take out some $10 million policy on your kid. I don't know about that, but I don't know. That's a little morbid for me as a parent. I don't even like thinking about that, but.
Can I tell you, we offer it at work and people do take it.
Yeah, like I said, I've got it, but it's provided, so.
Yeah, on a lot of life insurance individual policies, you can buy a child rider, and it can be, you know, pretty inexpensive. Some of them won't charge you per child; they'll just charge you a flat rate for all your kids. So if you're like the, you know, 17 children and counting people, you're like, yeah,
sold. That's actually what we do. It's a flat. It's $2 per month, regardless of how many kids. So we do have somebody who's Hasidic Jewish, and he has 7 or 8 kids. So the kids are all covered. But I will say that I have unfortunately had to process one employee's child who passed away from leukemia. They were pretty grateful for the fact that they didn't have to, you know, cough up the cash out of pocket to pay for a burial. But I will say that 99.999% of the people who have this insurance do not use it and will not need to use it, thank God. So this is one of those things that maybe you don't really need to pay for, because In my years of being in HR, and I've only had one ever.
We had Joseph Montanaro on from USAA back in September. And Chris, he made a case for insurance on kids, saying that, you know, he talked about future insurability, talked about how inexpensive it is. He said that for the vast amount of families, they might not want it. He said, but if you decide to do it, he says, it's not the end of the world. Is that how you feel about it? Or, you know, because I feel a lot of people in insurance are like, no way ever, like this guy in the article, no way ever buy insurance on your kids.
Yeah. In the article, he basically says that, look, unless your kid is Mary-Kate or Ashley Olsen, you know, there's not going to be lost wages. But I sort of disagree with that, because what about the lost wages of parents who are grieving? And so I personally have $100,000 on each of my children.
Wow.
Yeah. What are their names and where do you live? Speaking of another insurance, how about kidnap insurance? But, okay, go ahead.
Sandy's devising a new strategy, a new side hustle.
Hey, I'm trying to get rich quickish.
Right. Yeah. I just think about if something happened with one of my kids, God forbid, that if I didn't want to work for a few months or just God knows how, what would happen to me mentally. I'm sort of like protecting my own income rather than theirs. But in the article, he also talks about, you know, using the grow up plans like what Gerber has. I don't believe in, well, their whole life. They seem expensive. It says, you know, for pennies a day, or I would rather see someone put their money in like a 529 plan. And you get better tax advantages, and it's not a forced contribution sort of thing like with a whole life plan.
Well, especially when you say it's so cheap to add it as a rider to your own term insurance plan, right? I mean, probably.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, most of those, I think the most you can get is maybe $2,000 or $5,000. Oh, okay. It's enough it's gonna help. But I sort of have a rule that I don't ever buy insurance on anything. If it's going to replace, you know, $1,000 or less, I don't even think about it. You know, I don't care if it's going to cost me $5 to insure that computer. You know, I'm not going to buy it. So I believe in insurance for something that it's going to be a catastrophic event, and you really can't incur the risk. And that's why life insurance, you know, is so important, right? If you're insuring maybe 20 or 30 years of somebody's career and earnings potential, that's just something that you can't afford to mess around with.
I think that's almost a great place to leave it. Ty, I want you to have the last word, because one thing that I wasn't aware of, and because you bought insurance so recently, I couldn't believe how much better I felt when I got insurance. Tell me about how you felt. Did you feel better? Did you feel the same? Do you feel like now you're paying this money out of pocket you didn't feel before?
Instantly. I felt a weight lifted from my shoulders, Joe, that I didn't even know was there, to be honest with you. I sleep better at night. When I travel for work, I feel much more content. I feel like my main job as a husband and a father is to take care of my kids and my wife and to provide for them. And, you know, for like $40 a month, I can do that, right? It's less than the cost of a date night. And so now, you know, if something happens and I die, their life gets better. That's the best gift I could buy for them. And, you know, peace of mind for me has been just an unexpected benefit.
But doesn't it also feel good waking up every day like I cheated death on one more day? Every
yes,
day.
I'm throwing away my premiums.
Really, exactly. Right. It's really a gamble because you're hedging your bets. Hey, I'm gonna die within this time, or I'm not going to die within that amount of time. You know, you're going to have to pay it out. So every day I wake up like, yep.
Well, you know what happens.
Insurance you really want to lose on, right?
Exactly.
Right, that's right. You want to throw that money away.
Well, you know what happens, guys, is that now when Ty's spouse puts those mushrooms in front of him in the bowl, he actually eats them, right?
Maybe the best life insurance I could have gotten was not getting life insurance, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, your point earlier.
It was funny when I got my big policy, you know, for over $2 million, my wife just kind of did this 180 and she started feeding me all these French fries and, you know, She tried to show me these articles supporting why smoking is actually good for your health and relieves stress and stuff. And
your wife might be on.
I don't know what's going on there, but
tell her to call me.
All those workouts are overrated, right? That's so awesome. Well, hey guys, I think that's got to do it for today. We are way over, but thank you for spending the time with us, because that was some fantastic discussion about a topic nobody likes talking about, insurance, and the fact that you guys were willing and able to do it this well. It's just a testament to just how great you guys are at what you do. So let's go ladies first. Let's start with you, Sandy. What's happening? I mentioned Yes, I Am Cheap earlier, but you also have the awesome Color of Money site. Tell us yes. What's going on with you.
Yeah. So it's colorful.money. It's a collaborative effort from a number of bloggers of color to really raise visibility of personal finance for people of color, because they're sadly behind and lacking. Every February is when we do our collective project.
Right.
Last year, we called it 29 Days. So for 29 days, we shared a different fact about people of color and their relationships with money. This year is something different. And we're actually pushing it back out of February because there's just so much going on with this inauguration and everything going on. We don't want to get lost in the shuffle. We're going to push that back this year. So instead in February, what I've got coming up is a new program that I'm calling Credit Mastermind. And it's designed to help people through the basics of their credit. When I say basics, I mean the absolute basic, like how to read your credit report. What are all those numbers and symbols and things like that? How to read your credit card statement. What is a credit report? All those lovely basic things that we assume everybody knows, but they're really ashamed to say they don't really know. So that's what I'm working on. And that's what's going to be coming out pretty soon. It's called Credit Mastermind. Awesome. Love to have you guys on.
Cool. We'd love to be on. We can destroy that in a hurry.
Of course.
And I will link to all of that in our show notes. That and Yes, I Am Cheap, one of my favorite places to go, because I always think Sandy's going to reach out from the website and hit me.
or at least fire you.
At least fire me, right. All of that on our show notes page. Ty, let's go to you next. Thanks a ton for hanging out tonight. And tell us what's going on at Get Rich Quickish.
Yeah, thanks a lot, you guys. It was nice speaking with you all. So I just wrapped up my first year of writing over at GetRichQuickish.net. And we're pretty excited for year number two. I've got some big plans in place. The theme this year is focusing on personal independence through financial independence. Stop by, join in on the discussions. We don't take ourselves too seriously, and we'd love to have some of you stop by and join in on the fun.
Now, I love what a great diary it is, Ty, and I also like what a community spot it is. Some of the comments are as fun as anything over there. So thanks a lot for playing, and we'll have a link to your site on the show notes at stackybenjamins.com. Chris, thanks a ton, man. Tell us what's going on with you, because you always have like 50 things that you're working on. I think you make my ADD look like nothing.
Well, the most exciting thing that I'm working on is I'm actually building a course for other insurance agents who want to replicate what I've done online. So I'm sort of known in the insurance industry as someone who knows how to get traffic and leads from Google and the search engines and whatnot. So that's going to be at trafficforlife.net. It's a course I'm building for insurance agents. And I'll have I'm not sure how many insurance agents there would be listening to this, but I'll have a landing page for, coming soon, but by the time that this is up. But my main business is at insuranceblogbychris.com. So come check us out there. Our tagline there is from bad hearts to missing parts. We've got you covered because we specialize in people helping people with high risk medical issues. So whatever it is, we've recently rebranded. Come check us out with any health issues that you may have. And you can learn about saving on life insurance there.
Boy, that's where you super need a guy like you to navigate the application process, because just from a guy who did only a little bit of that as a financial planner, that can be a minefield for those people, Chris.
Yeah, you don't want to go to a rookie agent or, brother or right. sister because they're family. You want to use an experienced independent agent.
Right. Somebody who knows the underwriters incredibly well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, good stuff. And I'll link to that and also the course, if you send that to me, I'll be able to have that on our show notes also at stackybenjamins.com. Thanks for playing, guys.
Awesome. Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, everyone.
Nice to meet you guys. Thank you.
Oh, that's going to put a cap on it, everybody. Well, almost put a cap on it, because we have our game to talk about in just a second, but the biggest game you should be playing right now is head to stackybenjamins.com/SoFi. That's spelled S-O-F-I, because the great people at SoFi, $15 billion in loans funded to date. Most of those are helping people with their student loans, their personal loans, and their mortgages. But when it comes to student loan refinancing, how about a much, much lower payment and interest rate on your loans? In fact, it's funny. In 2 minutes, you'll find your rate, and the average person at SoFi saves an average of $288 a month on their student loans and $22,359 in total. They're one of the few lenders that handles federal and private student loan consolidation. Plus, as a member, you have access to a whole lot of perks: career strategy services, customer support 7 days a week, invites to SoFi events, and more. StackyBenjamins.com/SOFI, not just for student loans, but also for personal loans and for mortgages as well. Variable rates right now, as I read this, and these change if you're listening to it, not on the day it came out, but rates right now starting from 2.345% variable, and fixed rates, 3.375. On the top end, they are 6.27 with auto pay for variable and 6.74 APR fixed rate. Of course, it's all based on your credit. To find out your rate, stackybenjamins.com/SOFI. And the people that rate SoFi number one, wherever they compete, is Magnify Money. stackybenjamins.com/Magnify Money. I was talking earlier about when you go to Magnify Money, how easy it is to just click what you want. Check this out. So it says compare the best offers for, I clicked on it while I was talking. You might have heard my fingers moving on my keyboard as I was doing this. Balance transfers, cashback rewards, 0% interest credit cards, low interest credit cards, secured credit cards, checking accounts, savings accounts, linked checking and savings accounts, CD rates, personal loans, student loan refinance, parent plus loan refinance, auto loans, small business loans, private student loans, credit monitoring, identity theft, and budget apps. All that at MagnifyMoney, stackybenjamins.com/MagnifyMoney. And the average person, by the way, who goes there saves $450 on average. So let's add this up. $450 on average at Magnify Money. Another, what, $229 at SoFi. SoFi also gives you $100 if you use our link. Using both of those places together to get your act together, we're saving you well over $700. StackyBenjamins.com, nearly $800. StackyBenjamins.com/MagnifyMoney. All right. For those of you playing along, this will put the icing on the cake. You know, we've got a great game going on now, and a lot of people taking part in our game. Here's the way that the game works. Starting just 4 weeks ago, I started playing the brand new game on Fridays. OG, who's here on Mondays and Wednesdays, isn't here with me on Fridays. So we play a game. And the way that it works is this. You figure out the clue to answer the question each week. That answer ends up being a clue in a bigger game. So we have had now four clues in the bigger game, four separate questions that I've asked that you've had the ability to answer. Those questions have been fairly easy so far. Today's is going to be the toughest one, I think, so far. But however, let me tell you this, if you get today's and you got the last three, first chance, I think, that we might actually have a winner. And that doesn't mean people haven't tried to win so far. We had a lot of people who wrote last week thinking that they might have had the answer to the question. And a funny one actually came from Garrett. And I really want to know how Garrett came up with this answer, just because a lot of the answers I've gotten have been very close to the same. And they're nowhere near right, but they're all, I can kind of figure out their processing. But Garrett gave me one that was awesome. He said three cheese chili omelet. And I'm not sure, A, I've never had a three cheese chili omelet. And B, I'm not even sure where he came up with the chili, where he came up with the omelet. So I love that answer. That definitely made my day yesterday. All right. So here is today's clue. And once again, figure out what today's puzzle is, take that answer, add that answer to the three answers before this one, and then figure out if you can make any sense of that to maybe guess where I'm headed. Here we go. I don't care about directions, but if you head 50 miles up the Hudson River from New York City, you will find this school. I don't care about directions, but if you head 50 miles up the Hudson River, you will find this school. That's it. Add that to the other ones. Once again, once I get the right answer, I'm going to give 24 hours to anybody else who has the correct answer. That gives people some time. If you're on the West Coast or you're halfway around the world, wherever you are listening, you'll get some time to answer the question yourself. That's going to do it for this week. What a great week it was, wasn't it? Wasn't Justin Stenstrom fantastic on Monday talking about fear? It's so tough to talk about fear. And the fact that Justin came on to talk about fighting your fear. And really, as a financial advisor, that's a lot of what I did, was help people think about their options and fight through whatever that thing is that stopped them. And Tracy Phobes, just the way she rattled off all these apps that can make grocery store shopping easy amazed me. And the fact that just a little planning ahead of time goes a long way. And using what you already have, great stuff. And I love our insurance roundtable today. Thanks again to Ty, Sandy, and to Chris, of course, for helping us out today. Next week, fantastic. We're going to kick off the week with a little talk about exchange-traded funds. You know, we talk about them all the time, and we get these questions about, how's an index fund like a mutual fund, or how's it different? Well, index funds can be mutual funds, but largely a lot of them are exchange traded funds. So we're going to talk to Martin Small, who's the man at iShares USA, division, of course, of BlackRock. He's coming down to the basement. He's not coming down to the basement. I take that back. He's going to be on my dad's shortwave on Monday. On Wednesday, do you remember the Arizona State point shaving scandal? Well, as our lead up to the Super Bowl, we're going to talk about gambling and getting in trouble gambling. Just a fantastic story about gambling and cheating. Joe Gagliani is coming down to the basement. He has a new memoir out where he tells the whole story, and he's going to kind of tell us some of those things about Super Bowl betting, about betting in general, and about his scandal. And then next Friday, we have Roger Whitney coming down to the basement, the retirement answer man, joining Greg and Paula on next week's roundtable. So two out of the three of our normal contributors, and Roger Whitney, who's always fun. If you haven't listened to his Retirement Answer Man podcast, you should check that out. In the middle, getting ready for Valentine's Day, we have a treat for you there, a place called Card Cash. And we'll explain that. But hold off on your Valentine's Day gift giving. You can get the same awesome gift, but less expensive if you listen to next Friday's show. How great is that? So great week next week. Hope you can tune in. By the way, we've also booked some just amazing guests coming up. The same quirky stuff you expect, some of the industry leaders that you expect. I just love the diversity coming down to the show over the next 6 weeks. So exciting stuff that I can't talk about yet. All right. Have yourself a great weekend. Go Stacks and Benjamins. Bye-bye.
This show is the property of SB Podcasts, LLC. The show is created by Joe Saul Sehi, produced by Richie Rutter Reese, and engineered by the amazing Steve Stewart. Special thanks to Sandy Smith, Chris Huntley, and Ty Roberts for appearing on today's podcast. You'll find more about Ty at GetRichQuickish.net. Check out Sandy's site, YesIAmCheap.com, and Chris can be found at InsuranceBlogByChris.com. And also a big thank you to Carla Deering from Sum 180 for appearing on today's FreshBook FinTech segment. Find out more about Sum 180 at SUM, then the number 180.com, or you'll find a link to all of today's guests on our show notes page at stackingbenjamins.com. SB Podcasts may receive payment on the show from sponsors and guests in the form of books, giveaway items, discounts, or other remuneration. There's no way you would take advice from these dorks, but like Joe's mom always says, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only, and before making any financial moves, consult with a real financial advisor. And finally, special thanks to Joe's mom for informing me that after shipping and processing of your claim, we'll have to regret to inform you that you owe us 67 cents. Don't worry about it, though. Your old pal Doug's got you covered this time.
What's wrong with you?
It's either this show or indigestion. I hope it's indigestion.
Why?
It'll get better in a little while.